Can't you see it? A glistening 100-megawatt solar field begging to be built? It's photovoltaic modules and balance of system powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean? We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We are now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Oh, it's such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
But you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 40% off select styles, plus a free professional measure and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 40% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Whether you want to
buy, buy, buy.
In a bear market or
sell, sell, sell
in a bull market, Jim Cramer can help you become a better investor. Mad Money, weeknights 6 Eastern. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, when they win, we play the locker room speech from D'Amico Ryans at 7 o'clock. Hopefully we get four more of these. Four more, but this is yesterday. After yesterday's win over the Titans, here was D'Amico Ryans with his football team.
Hey, man, hey, congratulations, man. Heck of a job. Way to finish the season strong right there. Great job. Yes, back-to-back years of undefeated on the road in our division. Back-to-back years of division champs. Back-to-back years of 10 wins. So great job by everybody in here, man. Great job. Really proud of everyone, as always. Proud of the work you guys put in. Now the real season's about to get started. Right now, man, you guys play ball the right way. Love how you guys finish. Excellent job. Now it's time to go hunt. All right? This is what you play this game for, man, to have an opportunity, all right, to go play in postseason football. And we here. We don't know who we're playing yet. We got to see what happens later in the game. But it really don't matter. All right? We get an opportunity in our house. All right? Our house versus anybody who want it. All right, you guys are built for this. We're ready for it, and I can't wait to see us play next week. And I'm fired up by the opportunity, ready to get started. Love everybody here. Love the work you guys put in. Hey, man, let's keep taking it up. Keep taking it up another notch, another level, everything you got. Right, win or go home is right here, right now. Let's get it.
All right, so there, that was D'Amico Ryans after the game. He's fired up, man. He's ready. Obviously, at that point, they didn't know what the outcome of the Chargers-Raiders game was going to be. Yeah. Turns out the Chargers are heading into the postseason. I don't know, man. Like, I may come back to regret saying this. I mean, they finished 11-6. They have a better record than the Texans do. The odds makers view the Chargers as the better football team right now. Clearly, they're a 3-point favorite at NRG Stadium. And yet, you know, there's people saying they're going into the playoffs on this high note, blah, blah, blah. I mean, the Chargers, they beat up on the Patriots last week. They beat up on the Raiders yesterday. They blew out two bad teams. Good for them. Both on the road, so that's good. They did get smoked at home by the Buccaneers 40-17, like 2.5 weeks ago. Like, it,
yeah.
You know,
and
like,
that was, yeah, and with, I mean, it was a thorough butt whipping.
Yeah.
The Tampa scored 27 points unanswered in the second half.
Right.
So the Chargers defense is the number one scoring defense. But I think it coming out of Los Angeles, the people would say, all right, yeah, but the defense has kind of showed signs of weakness. They've shown some blemishes and flaws, including in that Bucs game. So it's not like the Chargers are some formidable force that have flown under the radar. They're a wild card team for a reason.
Mm-hmm.
And it's certainly not an unbeatable foe or anything. I'm glad you pointed this out last week, because it's true. I think that on paper, the Steelers were probably a better matchup for the Texans, but the Steelers also might have had 35,000 people in the stadium.
Yeah, I didn't want to see that, man.
Yeah, and so the Texans defense, by and large, until the Christmas Day game, had done a really good job in NRG Stadium of turning quarterbacks into the worst version of themselves.
Yes.
So getting Will Anderson hopefully completely healthy and having Danielle Hunter out there and everything else, if you can wash away all memory, just do the Men in Black memory stick thing there on that Ravens game.
Yeah.
Because the Ravens are a whole different scenario.
Yeah.
And they weren't able to work their magic against Lamar Jackson at all. But I think that they could get the worst version of Justin Herbert.
For the Texans, the Ravens were an alien. All the other teams were human beings. Some of them really formidable human beings, but they played well against pretty much everybody other than the Ravens at home this year. I mean, I know they lost the Titans game. They had 8 sacks and a pick 6 in that game. The defense did, you know, and then they made Josh Allen and Jared Goff and Tua the worst versions of themselves. I think that's the hope for this game, is that they make Justin Herbert the worst version of himself.
That's one thing that, you know, CJ yesterday said something about how, you know, they've played good teams really well. They just haven't finished the game. And I'm going, that's true in a couple instances. I would say that, you know, the Chiefs, if it hadn't been for everything that had happened in the season leading up to the Chiefs game, I would have been more apt to say, yeah, you know what, they were right there in the fourth quarter. But then they imploded, and they knocked themselves out of position when they were down in scoring position through bad penalties and decisions.
Yep.
So, like that Lions game, the defense picked off Jared Goff 5 times. You lost the game.
Yeah.
That's not slugging it out with the Lions. Mm-hmm. And then the defense, even like the defense had lapses in the second half as well. So it's got to be, like we've been saying all along, if the Texans are going to make a push or a run in the playoffs, they've got to just play out of their brains defensively. They have to have an all-time performance.
Yeah, I think that's the thing that worries me the most is I have always thought they're going to need to be, like, even in training camp, like, if they're going to win a Super Bowl, they need to be the best version of themselves in the postseason for sure. Like, the AFC, it's tough sledding. My concern now is that the best version of themselves just isn't good enough. You know, like, even if they... I don't know that their A game is good enough to beat the Chiefs or the Bills or the Ravens on the road. You know, like, that's the thing. Whereas I felt in the preseason, what I envisioned this team looking like, especially offensively, I would have said, oh, yeah, they might even have to come here to beat us in those games, you know? So that's kind of how it went. So yesterday, let's dig into, we dug into the checklist. Let's dig into some of the things that happened yesterday and how much do these things matter as we get ready for the Chargers on Saturday. I would say the opening drive, good to see. I would say that was a nice check mark to have that good opening drive from C.J. Stroud. My level of good I feel about it probably isn't as high as the level of bad I would have felt had it not gone well. But it ended with this, a Nico Collins 2-yard touchdown catch.
Third and goal. C.J. back to throw, back in the end zone. Caught Collins! Touchdown, Houston, on the opening drive as Nico goes over 1,000 yards on the season.
Now it's good to see. I like the way CJ threw the ball. That was kind of opposition agnostic. Like, he threw the ball. I don't care who it was against. There were some things that happened on that drive, as you pointed out. You're probably not going to be able to feed Nico Collins. You know, you're not going to get 5 touches every drive.
4 touches.
Four touches. So one run.
One
and
of them
three
was an
catches.
End around.
Yeah. So one run and 3 catches. Yeah.
Now, yeah, getting Nico involved in the shorter stuff, and then Nico on that blitz was really good to see because they've struggled picking up stuff off the edge this year.
Yep.
And CJ didn't hesitate, got the ball to Nico. Nico probably fumbled the ball, but that's neither here nor there. So that was good. And yeah, I think the fluidity with which CJ played was maybe the most promising.
That's a good way to put it. Yeah, that's a good way to put it. So that was good. That was the opening drive. Nico again down there deep in the red zone, a target for CJ. That's good to see that they've got a solution.
They had a couple run plays stuffed leading up to that. The Titans were selling out versus the run.
Yeah.
So I'll credit Bobby Slowick with using play action on that and sucking everybody up to the point where you get the classic, oh my gosh, the best player on the team is uncovered in the end zone.
Yeah, it was funny. Ross Tucker and Jay Feely and Tom McCarthy were like, I don't know what the Titans exactly were doing here. So CJ got out of the game after that one drive. That was good to see. Deontay Johnson, not overly involved, but he did make this play right
now. Davis calls for the ball. Here's pressure. Mills plants. Mills fires left sideline and caught. Deontay Johnson, first down, left side, 28-yard line. The toe tapper and the sticks move on the pass from Mills to Johnson. No.
So it wasn't a totally empty box score for Deontay Johnson. And look, they're going to need bigger numbers out of him moving forward against better teams. But I was encouraged by some of the movement that I saw out there by him, you know, getting open.
I think he was open multiple times, including the two incompletions to Deontay Johnson. He had separation down on the sideline, and then he was open on the short play down near the goal line, and Davis had a bad throw on that. So, again, that throw to Johnson might be the one where people... Immediately after the game, I felt like some people, without really thinking too much about it, thought that Mills had a really good game. And he did not have a really good game. I'm not crushing him for it or anything. It is what it is. He's out there in a glorified preseason game.
I think
Mills has played better games than that before, but there wasn't anything where I thought, oh, wow, this is the version of Mills we've been waiting for.
No. I don't either. I thought he was poised out there. You know, like the numbers don't look great, but I thought he was poised. I thought the play that he hit Woods on, that Woods fumbled, was a really nice job of stepping up, knowing where the line of scrimmage was. The scramble down near the goal line, I almost would have rather he not shown that much moxie down near the goal line, because, you know, if CJ gets hurt, then we're down to, I guess, Keaton Slovis is on the practice squad still. I don't know who the quarterback would be. You know,
I mean, there's nobody in the game. Yeah, there was...
they didn't bring up an emergency quarterback for that.
It would have been CJ just handing the ball off a bunch, or just
wildcat.
Putting somebody back there that they... They would wildcat it.
Yeah. So Mills to Johnson. So that was Deontay Johnson's first catch as a Texan. First of hopefully many.
That's one of the scariest things you'll ever hear on a football field, is like in the fourth quarter of a preseason game or something like that, when all of a sudden you haven't played since the first quarter, and then the fourth quarter they're like, hey, get warmed up. You might have to go in because a bunch of guys got injured.
Yeah.
No.
Like I was
not like this.
Yeah, man. I already started drinking.
Yeah, I had 7 hot dogs at halftime.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so next highlight was a good one, man. When Dameon Pierce needs to hit top-end speed, Dameon Pierce can hit top-end speed.
Davis feeds Pierce through a hole, 15, 20. He's gone! 40, 50, the 40 of Tennessee, the 30. Will he be caught? The 10, 5, rock and roll! Dameon Pierce, coast to coast.
Wow, like he was shot out of a cannon.
All right, and that was the one. If you're on social media, the team puts out, it seems like, one highlight every week that they've got video running on Vandermeer for. And if you look around hard enough on Twitter, you'll find it, or on Instagram. But Vandy was fired up, man. He was like grabbing the edge of the, they have like an outdoor press box there, you know, where the windows open. He's like grabbing the edge of it. He was fired up.
Dameon
hit that top speed, man. Yeah.
Yeah, the best thing about that was that he had two defenders behind him for like a 2-yard cushion the entire time. And then when he got down to the 5, how did he describe it? Oh, he said the Hellcat. What did he say? The Hellcat broke down.
On the postgame show. Yeah.
Mike Brown decided, I guess he was trying to poke at the ball, but it looked like he was pushing him into the end zone
So
he got a little assist from the guy who would be his pursuer.
He did. It was
looks like a point shaving scandal to me.
It's interesting. Yeah, that's right. It's interesting. You know, there's 3 plays I can think of in Damian's career that were like, he had that big run in his rookie year against the Chargers. He had the kickoff return last year, and then this run here. And even the Patriots run, which is like a 59-yard touchdown. Like, Damian's this compact, you know, like, he's like a low center of gravity guy, but when he hits that top end speed, man, like he doesn't run away from people, but he doesn't let people catch up to him either.
Yeah.
He's underrated in that aspect.
The good thing about that play, too, was that, you know, Tunsil got his hand on the backer just right there with the right angle and everything. And so it wasn't like an overly impressive block or anything, but it was the block that needed to be made. The impressive part about that was that compared to earlier in the season, there were a lot of times where Tunsil and whoever was playing left guard wouldn't be on the same page as to how to handle that front. And like a previous left guard might have just left the defensive tackle, thinking that Laremy Tunsil was going to overtake him. But there was no hesitation there. Titus reached the tackle, and Laremy worked up to the backer, and they had a nice seam, and it was off to the races after that. So that was, and it was good blocking front side too. Mm-hmm. So that was, yes, more of that, please. And yeah, they had on some of the 5 through 15 yard plays in the game, they had some more plays like that where it was blocked up the right way.
Yeah, it was good to see. All right, wasn't all great. 3rd and 10, Titans backed up on their own 1 yard line. This was after the Texans went for it on 4th and goal at the 1, threw incomplete in the end zone. So the Titans are starting at their own 1. They get it to 3rd and 10, and then this happened on 3rd and 10.
On 3rd and 10, Levis in the gun, deep in his end zone, firing deep. Levis downfield right, has Ridley along the sideline. My goodness, inside the Titan 40. Did he make the catch? Yes. Deep shot by Levis, and Ridley gets the completion, good for 38 yards.
Yeah. And if I remember correctly, D'Amico actually challenged that play.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, because it ended up being just his hip or thigh bone hit right before everything else went out.
Yeah, yeah.
I was happy about that play because I know for a fact that if Derek Stingley were in coverage, it probably would have been an interception.
Oh, yeah.
And yet, because it was a reception, the Titans might just go ahead and give Will Levis one more shot.
Levis for another year.
Between that and the one we're going to play a little bit later, that was, Levis will get credit from the Titans brass for a couple of things that were just sheer dumb luck by him.
Well, on that play, Ridley went over 1,000 yards for the season, so he got some sort of incentive, $250,000, whatever the normal incentive is.
Yeah.
And the cameras panned over to Levis, and Levis is doing the
Johnny Manziel money thing.
He wasn't doing the Johnny Manziel money thing.
He was doing the...
He's making it rain, shuffling the money off of his hand. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching this, I'm like, man, you're 3-13. You're terrible. I get it, you're doing to support a teammate, but... I mean, man, you're Will Levis. Like, stay in the moment. You're still down by 10 in this game, by the way. Like, you're not winning or anything. And appropriately, on the very next, literally the very next play, this happens.
2nd and 5 from the Titan 45.
Next
Pollard
play, 2 plays.
In the backfield, Levis under center. And a fumble here as it's chased down by Barnett at the 30, 25, 20, 15, 10. Barnett still going at the 5. Taking people with him all the way to the end zone. Barnett does it again. His 2nd touchdown of the year. Big guy running and scoring.
Barnett, this is the best thing about Barnett is Barnett's been a machine in late season games in the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And yesterday he had a TFL that was basically a drive killer. He had a sack that was a drive killer. Then he had this recovered fumble for a touchdown. And then after this, he still had another. He had a QB hit on a 3rd and long that killed that play. Like, he was all over the place in critical moments yesterday.
Yeah, he was. It was great to see. It was almost the exact same situation where when he scored the touchdown against the Cowboys. Because I remember having the same feeling as his touchdown in Week 11 against the Cowboys. That was a game that against a bad team on the road. The margin was 10 at the time, just like it was yesterday. It was 20-10 in the Cowboys game. It was 16-6 yesterday when this happened. And I'm like, man, this felt familiar because when he scored that touchdown in the Cowboys game, I'm like, okay, they're going to win. Now I don't have to worry about this. It's not a 10-point game anymore. It's a 17-point game. And the same thing yesterday. Like, okay, I don't have to worry about this. You know, because the Titans with the ball and it's a 10-point game, all the backups are in. I probably wanted the Texans to win this game an inordinate amount for a game that didn't mean anything just because of the 10-7 and it's the Titans and all that other stuff. So that was cool. You're right. Barnett, he was awesome yesterday. He was all over the place.
The biggest thing that I guess, when you've got, they're all backups out there playing, but the same old issue of missed tackles and then just blown coverages on big plays in the second half.
Dude.
Like most of it wasn't because of starters that were out there, but it's the same thing that played the Texans starters versus the Titans the last time they played.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, like I'm watching. I'm going, okay, if Chris Boyd and Russ Yeast are on the field in Baltimore in a divisional round game, I'm like, all right.
There's,
well, Probably sunk.
Chris Boyd will be on the field. I mean, there's not a lot of defensive backs left. You know? Like there's Yeast, you can play this last play before we talk about Yeast.
Yeah, here we go. This was the last highlight we'll play, and then we'll get to acknowledge me. This was the Titans' other touchdown in the game.
Levis awaits the snap. Here it is.
Only touchdown.
Levis has time, looking now, pressure, now gutting it long downfield, and caught, touchdown. Oh, my gosh. Amazing reception. Tay Martin plucks it out of the air for six.
Russ Yeast, who's a safety who was called up from the practice squad, God bless him, bless his heart. This was a heave by Levis. I mean, Levis is just he's throwing a glorified Hail Mary. Yeah. And Yeast is parked underneath it, getting ready to catch it like it's a baseball landing in the stands at a baseball game. He's parked underneath it, looking up, getting ready to catch it. And in swoops Tay Martin to snare it away from him and walk into the end zone. So that was the Titans' only touchdown of the day. Is that?
I felt really, really bad for him at first, and I still felt bad for him later, but he did get 836 snaps with LA last year. So it's not like he's a rookie out there just, you know, first time in the NFL.
Which
he's got to know better than that just to sit there like a punt return.
Rams or Chargers?
Rams, I believe.
Okay, so this won't be a revenge
Rams,
game.
Yep, Rams.
Won't be a revenge game coming up this Saturday for him, for Russ Yeast. So that was it, man. 23-14, kind of walking back through things yesterday. The good, the bad, and the ugly, and hopefully a lot of good on Saturday when the Chargers come to town. Noon kickoff. No, not noon kickoff. 3:30 kickoff. What am I thinking? It's the playoffs. It's Saturday at 3:30 right here on Sports Radio 610. 12:30 Texans countdown right outside the stadium. Should be nice and chilly from everything that I'm seeing. Bundle
oh,
up.
Yeah. It's a high of 48 on Saturday.
Oh, did you check it? I haven't checked it yet.
Yeah.
That's not too bad.
No.
It was 30 when I left the house this morning. Screw that. Ugh.
Well, we'll be there at noon for the pregame, so yep. It's not like some of those days where it's not too chilly, but at 9 a.m. it's still kind of, let's see, Saturday high of 53.
Yep.
Ooh, it's balmy.
53 and sunny.
And sunny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's good tailgating weather. That's perfect tailgating weather. You just bundle up in the 50s, bundle up just enough.
Yeah.
Hot drinks work, cold drinks work. That's good. I'm happy for all of you to get to tailgate. That'll be good. All right. Let's acknowledge. We do it every Monday. Acknowledge me. We acknowledge the big performances from over the weekend, Texans and otherwise. And let's start with a couple guys we just talked about. They deserve acknowledgement. They got game balls, so why not get an acknowledgement from Payne and Pendergast? The first one is Damian Pierce.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge Damian Pierce for his 176 yards rushing yesterday, a career day, 19 carries. .76, 92-yard touchdown. Here's D'Amico Ryans after the game on Damian Pierce's performance on Sunday.
The thing about DP is what I always mention for all our guys. Whenever you get your opportunity, it's about what you do with that opportunity, right? And maximizing in DP, he maximizes opportunities today with the carries that he had, made some really big runs for us. So I was excited. I think our entire sideline was excited to see him play the way he's played for us.
So I'll ask you the same question I asked Clint Sterner on the post-game show yesterday, Seth. Does this game yesterday by Damian Pierce matter when it comes to the postseason, or is the decision, as far as volume goes, still going to be just the Joe Mixon show for, you know, 26 carries and everybody else gets two carries?
I think it's still a whole lot of Joe Mixon. I think if anything, it maybe keeps them mindful that, okay, we got to figure out why were we not able to get Damian Pierce going in the preseason or at any point in the regular season? Should we have been using him more? I think they're stuck in this bind right now where they feel like, well, we'd like to, but the blocking hasn't been good enough to, like, we need Joe Mixon out there every snap that we can to try to get the most that we can out of any given situation. So I hesitate to think, oh yeah, now all of a sudden the Texans are ferocious run blockers. There are too many instances in the game yesterday where they got their asses beat. They had some good. They had more good displays of blocking than they have had on average. But I still worry about the blocking, and especially versus good defenses. The Titans' defense has fallen apart since the last time the Texans lost to them. But I don't think it ends up making a difference in the playoffs. And people will be mad about that, and they're justified, I think, because it just speaks to the entirety of how bad the run game and how inconsistent the run game has been. Even in games where Joe Mixon's had over 100 yards rushing, they haven't been. There's still too many stuffs and tackles for a loss.
Did you see Cam Akers had a 58-yard run last night in that game?
The
Vikings game?
Yeah.
That was tough. I'm good for him. I like him. We met him on a post-game show one time, but that's tough to watch.
They don't know what they're doing in the run game. That's just flat out the... But we'll worry about that whenever.
Derek Barnett.
Acknowledge me!
Derek Barnett, as Seth pointed out earlier, not just a touchdown. He stuffed the stat sheet, man. Tackle for loss, sack, recovered fumble for a touchdown. He had a quarterback hit even after that. Derek Barnett was really, really good. Second touchdown of the year. After the game, we had Damian Pierce on the post-game show. And... I asked him to, Damian Pierce, author of now two Angry Run Scepters. He won one for his kick return in the Baltimore game. I said, can you give an Angry Run rating for Derek Barnett's touchdown yesterday?
Listen, he's getting a 10 out of 10 off bat because he's 2 for 2. He's 2 for 2 in Big Boy Rumbles right now. So he's getting a 10 off bat. And then the only thing I could knock him on, is ball security. But then he got the points back when he got into the end zone. You know what I'm saying? As long as you score the football, coach don't care how you got that.
All right, so there you go. I love that.
Wait, what was the ball security issue?
The ball was kind of out there a little bit. I think there was a point in that run where it looked like Barnett might have wanted to lateral it at some point.
I thought that was what was so impressive about it was I think he started off wanting to do the right thing, which is to give it to a speedy guy.
Yeah.
But Miles Bryant wasn't up alongside him yet. Like, to where I think Barnett probably even saw him. But that part of it was the smart part, too, which was, all right, the corner's usually coming up on the outside. So he looked to the sideline for it. And then when he saw that there was nobody to pitch it to, that's when he did what he had to do, which was just turn into the machine that he is.
Yeah.
Looking like one of those rugby videos where some overgrown 13-year-old is just trucking all these kids out there with no helmets on.
Mm-hmm.
That was beautiful. And that is twice in one season he's had a play that most defensive linemen get once in their career. It's just because he's not. Yes, he's an edge rusher, but he's not like built like a Myles Garrett type or anything. Yeah. He's a bigger guy.
Yeah.
He's kind of a combo type of guy.
Mm-hmm.
And they've been impressive runs both times.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was great to see, man.
I gotta look him up. I wonder if he ran track in high school or something.
Maybe.
I think he's one of these guys that was was recruited as a running back and then got moved to defensive end.
I mean, he was a first round pick, so obviously he probably, for his position, did some good things at the combine and whatnot.
He was a two-time Mr. Football at Brentwood Academy.
In Tennessee? Well, there you go. See? And look, he got to do that in his home state yesterday. That had to feel good. No wonder he was so juiced up. That was great. All right, J.J. Watt.
Acknowledge me.
We acknowledge J.J. Watt. Apparently, they gave J.J. Watt the stage to do this yesterday because they replayed the Derek Barnett touchdown on CBS, like, insert highlight style like they do. Like, hey, let's go back to the studio to JB and the guys for this update. But they did it during the Texans game. Like, they split the screen. The Texans game is still going on, and they allowed J.J. Watt to throw some shade at Tennessee.
Time to go to New York for an update.
Guys, this must be a mistake, but I'm going to do it anyway. We've got a Houston Oilers fumble picked up by the Houston Texans and ran back for a touchdown. And yes, that does appear to be two times in a row that the Houston Oilers uniforms have been worn against the Houston Texans, and the Texans happen to be 2-0 while wearing them. How about that?
Thank you, JJ, for that history lesson.
So I wonder if that, like he said, this may be a mistake because they're showing a Texans highlight during a Texans game. Or do you think they just, JJ came up with the idea on the fly and like, hey, this would be funny if I did this? And they said,
They either did it on the, or a producer thought of it. This would be a good moment. One thing I noticed about JJ yesterday, I've been monitoring this throughout the season, is how comfortable does he look in his suit and what's the fit like? Because for guys that are freakishly big and lean and muscular, it's actually kind of hard to look good in a suit. Think of like John Cena.
Yeah.
Like, John Cena's got nice suits and everything, and they're tailored, but like it doesn't quite look right because he's such a big guy.
Right.
JJ, early in the season, still looked a little bit like John Cena. Over the second half of the season, his suits have been fitting him a little too well for him to make a comeback.
Do you think he's thinned out a little bit, or you think
I think he's just yeah, whatever Taylor. The body composition is, he's still freakish, but it's his suit just fits a little too well.
All right, so it sounds like you are acknowledging the certainty that J.J. Watt is not coming back to play football again.
I'd say there's only a 3% chance that he comes back.
All right, we'll acknowledge the 3% chance.
Acknowledge me!
By the way, let's acknowledge the Jacksonville Jaguars real quick.
Acknowledge me!
They just fired Doug Peterson. Several texts.
They did?
Yeah, they just fired Doug
How
Peterson.
How could they? Oh!
Trent Baalke.
You know what? The Colts did the right thing. They're rolling with who they got.
I know.
They're going to try to figure out... not just if Anthony Richardson can play quarterback, but if he can stay healthy while doing it. They're going to do it with Shane Steichen and Chris Ballard. They're going to do it without Pat McAfee. And they're doing the right thing. But now the Jaguars got to go and fire Doug Peterson.
Yeah,
thanks a lot.
Yeah, they'll probably fire Baalke now, too. Yeah, thanks a lot, Shad Khan. The streak.
Acknowledge me!
The Texans' road-winning streak in the AFC South is at 11 now. And yet another game where the Texans were an underdog. They've been underdogs in 8 of these 11 games. Yesterday probably was, in retrospect, probably shouldn't have been. But they were. So now it's at 11, Seth, the streak. They've not lost a division road game since week 6 of the 2021 season. The $100 parlay, mythical, that I made up for this 11 games, if it were an 11-game parlay, would pay, $100 would pay, almost $2.4 million right now.
So if I'm going to put this in my file of just in case I ever figure out time travel.
Right.
Like to go back and capitalize on it.
Yeah.
If I could go back in time, back to week 11 of 2021 and start betting on the Texans every road game in the division, then I'll have a cool $2.3 million by the end of it.
It's a more fun way to say the chances of this happening are 1 in 24,000, basically.
Yeah.
So that's
Did you ever see Nate Bargatze's bit about, like...
No, I don't know who he is.
Yeah, he's a comedian. He's a guy that...
He's part of the Christmas Day stuff on Amazon.
Yeah. But he's about, like, if he went back in time, he would have no idea what to do with it. You know, like, it was just like, hey, what stocks should I buy? Like, I don't know. Like, I'd have all these ideas. Like, I could tell people about a smartphone and how cool it is. But like, how do you do it? How do I make one? Like, just satellites?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Or at the end of the day, I'd be like, I don't know. It's a lot of work.
Yeah.
That's funny. I'm going to acknowledge the Minnesota Vikings owners here real quick.
Acknowledge me.
They bought up $2 million worth of tickets for around $1,000 apiece for this game that ended up being a big waste of money. They got blown out by the Lions. But they sold them to around 2,000 of their prime season ticket members and partners at $200 apiece. And
at 20% of the normal cost
of what they paid for it,
they were $1,000 a piece, and they sold them for $200.
$200 to valued members of their Vikings season ticket and sponsor community, so that you could have some purple representation in what was largely a blue building last night. I thought that was pretty cool. I wonder if more teams do this. I wonder if more teams like to get at least some sort of advantage or augment the advantage on the road if they feel like it's $2 million. We're a $10 billion enterprise or whatever.
I wonder how the Lions owners feel about that, or Lions management.
They tried to get the league to step in. Like, they tried to, sometimes they try to get Ticketmaster, Ticketmaster's a partner of the league. How are you allowing this to happen? That kind of thing. So I think they, if I'm not mistaken, I think they tried to block it, but there were no rules broken, you know?
Right, yeah. The dirty little secret that the owners never really want to talk about is that there's a good portion of season tickets in a lot of places that are owned by actual ticket brokers.
Yes.
So it's like the whole, like, hey, don't sell your tickets to the opponent. You're appealing to the cutthroat business person who doesn't give a damn about whether your team has home field support or not.
That's exactly right. All right, we've only got a couple minutes here. Let's skip down to the last one, Ben. The Duke's Mayo Bowl.
Acknowledge me!
We're acknowledging the Duke's Mayo Bowl. If you're not one of the big playoff bowls, or even that next tier of bowls that I think the Texas Bowl is in, that has good matchups every year, sells their tickets out, big TV contracts, all of those things, then you better have a good gimmick. And the Duke's Mayo Bowl, I think most people have known the gimmick for a while, that the winning coach gets doused in a vat of mayonnaise. I don't know that this was that this had been a tradition, though. They had a mascot there that's basically a big mayonnaise jar, and PJ Fleck was the winning coach. Minnesota beat Virginia Tech in the Duke's Mayo Bowl, and here was the unveiling of who was underneath the, you know, who's underneath the costume of the mayonnaise jar.
We have to unveil the surprise of who's underneath here. Tubby, you want to reveal yourself?
Flavor Flav.
Yeah, boy! Flavor Flav in the building at the Deuce Mayo Bowl! Welcome, champions!
It's Flavor Flav! That was PJ Fleck. PJ Fleck puts his arm around him and just screams, it's Flavor Flav!
And then PJ Fleck had a swim cap ready for the occasion.
Yeah.
But he didn't end up wearing it because, I mean, he already, like many good swimmers, he's already got his head shaved bald.
That's right.
And the cool thing about it with Fleck, too, he's one of the better dressed football coaches.
Oh, yeah,
out
he wears
there.
A tie. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's, he had like a very collegiate, you know, sweater. He has a sweater with a tie underneath and everything.
Yeah.
And he looked like he was all about it. You made a good point. Off air, which is that, man, if Belichick ever gets in this situation, it's going to be the best.
The ACC has a tie to this game. That's why Virginia Tech was in it. If North Carolina wins the Duke's Mayo Bowl next year, it's going to be one of the greatest moments in TV history.
In the Mayo advertising wars, the Mayo wars, which I never would have anticipated. I didn't think that the follow-up to the Cola wars several decades later would be the Mayo wars.
Right.
I mean, Hellman's and Duke have gone in. They're going hard in the paint with their advertising spends.
Yeah.
Except that Hellman's went in huge with Will Levis, benched quarterback.
Yes.
And the Duke's Mayo Bowl is becoming a mainstay of the culture of college football.
It is. Yeah.
The only thing I would say is that I think that when they dump the mayo, the viscosity of the mayo doesn't look right. I think they add some water to it or extra vegetable oil or something.
Oh, really?
To make it pour better.
Yeah.
It came out almost like Gatorade on them. I don't think that's a good visual for it. It's not how I want my mayo to look. Whenever when I douse you in mayonnaise, it's partly the thickness and the resistance is part of the fun of it.
That's
the process out.
It's why I let you do it. Yeah. I love the thickness of
watery mayo dumped over your head.
I'd be so mad if it was watery mayo that you dumped on me. So yeah, there you go. Duke's Mayo Bowl, man. I tell you what, Hellman's did hit it big with that. The Mayo Game Day Be Delicious slogan, though, is pretty good. That's pretty fun.
I've wanted to ask Ross about the Mayo Wars, but I'm guessing because when Ross Tucker comes on, it's sponsored by Hellman's.
He'd be biased.
I tweeted that out yesterday that I think that Ross Tucker has become one of my favorite color commentators. And I'm biased, obviously, because we know Ross. And yet, it's not like he wasn't my favorite color. He wasn't one of my favorite color commentators before. I think he's really grown into the role.
He's really good in games like yesterday. Or like the Chargers and the Patriots a week ago that was 40-7. And that I got a thought on that. We'll get to that. It's also Black Monday, and guys are getting fired, including in the division. Let's dig into that as well coming up next.
It's a Shoppers John Deere Reaction Monday on Sports Radio 610. Live from the Mokarem Injury Lawyers Studios, here's Payne and Pendergast.
All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. I got to get to my Ross Tucker theory in just a second.
Sorry.
What's so funny?
I was shuffling through my old mail, and by that old mail, I mean the mail from a month ago that I haven't opened yet.
Yeah.
And I had a letter from the IRS requesting documentation for my 2022 tax return that needed to be replied to within a month, and I just now opened it.
Okay, so where are you?
32 days after.
Is there a grace period?
After I received it, yes. So I'm now in It's not a big deal. I have the documentation, but it's gonna. I'm gonna have to. You know,
I know.
They didn't send it registered or anything. I was like, ah, whatever. I thought it was one of those. I don't know. You know, Social Security statements.
Sorry, my mail needs to be registered if I'm gonna read it. Okay, that's funny. The news right now in the coaching community is the Jags have fired Doug Peterson. Have not seen any news about their GM, Trent Baalke, in Jacksonville, but the rumor has been that he's going to be gone. He should be gone. Like, they both should be gone. The Giants, I'm curious if you're surprised about this, Seth. Giants are retaining Brian Daboll and general manager Joe Shane.
I am surprised, Sean. Because Shane has seemed like the master at perhaps displacing blame. He seems like a master politician in the way he manipulates his owner. And I know most of this just from the Hard Knocks and watching the actual interaction. I don't require sources or anything. I recognize a smooth talker when I see one. And he's smooth talking poor John Mara all over the place.
Your source is your Max subscription. That's your source for this.
So I guess the surprise would be in that I guess that Joe Shane likes Brian Daboll. Because I think if Joe Shane wanted Brian Daboll to be the scapegoat, he could have made him the scapegoat. Mm-hmm. And I think John Mara would have been putty in his hands.
Yes.
So it must mean that Daboll and Shane are, you know, when they had their conversation about Daniel Jones, I'm guessing Brian Daboll saw upside in Daniel Jones, and maybe that if he didn't, then there would be a whole lot of told you so. Yep. Oh, thanks a lot, Shane. And then Daboll would probably be gone right now. So at the very least, I think they're acknowledging that they whiffed on Daniel Jones.
We both screwed up here.
Yeah.
So the Giants are retaining their coach and GM. I guess the other ones to watch at this point. We're kind of running out of jobs where I think there's a hardcore chance a guy could get fired. The Giants were the last one. I think the Cowboys obviously are one to watch because they have been all year and they were a disappointment.
Well, and he's not even a firing. He's just not under contract.
That's true. Yeah. He's a free agent now. He can go somewhere else if he wants. There's been more talk about McCarthy ending up with somebody else's job than going back to the Cowboys. That's a great point. Yeah, so that's not even firing.
It's weird that Jerry Jones will make so many decisions that seem like they're either impulsive or guided by money or whatever else. But then at the same time, he does the exact opposite of what you would expect from a guy like that, is he just waits and waits and waits and waits to make a decision. So I could see McCarthy kind of being in limbo until the league year begins.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, you can't go interview for anybody, can't do this, can't do that.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, the Cowboys won't be searching for a head coach. And then all of a sudden, league year will begin, and Jerry Jones will say, "You know what? We need a new head coach."
Oh, they get a new one, yeah. And you will not have the pick of the litter in March either. The only other ones I can think of, like the Raiders, they play pretty hard for Antonio Pierce, but that feels like one that if they're going to draft a quarterback, maybe just start over there. Like
where are they in the draft order right now?
They finished 5-12, I think. So they're probably somewhere in the between
bad
5
move.
And 10. Yeah,
bad move.
Yeah,
man.
It's a rough place to be. And then the Falcons, you know, I don't know what the thought is there. You know, clearly they've shifted gears over to Michael Penix. Raheem Morris is a defensive head coach who's on his second run there. You know, who's coached in Tampa Bay, kind of flunked out there. Like, do they look at Michael Penix? Are they a team that would say go after Ben Johnson to pair him with Michael Penix, and then that's their, because that's a division that is gettable over the next few years, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you make the right head coaching hire, you might be able to snag that division.
I think the thing with the Raiders to watch, perhaps or potentially, and this is nothing but speculation at this point, but, I mean, Tom Brady is a minority owner in that team.
Yep.
And I don't think he wants to be a coach. It seems like he's got just a lot of worldly interests that are kind of just cut off at the knees when you're a head coach. But I could see him wanting to be more involved. And this would be the perfect opportunity for him to step into some kind of an executive or management role.
Maybe, yeah.
Overseer. The Raiders are picking sixth.
Okay.
In a year where there's not really any quarterbacks that people are super excited about.
Yeah.
That would be interesting to, like, how much the Raiders might request it of him too.
Yeah, we'll see. Okay, you want my theory on Ross Tucker on why he may be too good for his own good?
Yeah.
He makes these unwatchable games watchable. I'm with you. Like, I thought he was awesome yesterday. I thought he was fantastic last week in the Chargers blowout win over the Patriots. Like, he's very entertaining. Amy loves him. like tweeting stuff he's saying. I'm like, I think she definitely likes Ross more than she likes me as a broadcaster, for sure.
He's tall, as his broadcast partner yeah. pointed out yesterday.
Ross is like, yeah, that is true.
It's been documented.
Here's the problem. And there's a wrestling thing that goes with this. There are wrestlers sometimes who are so good at making the stars that aren't very good at the technical stuff look yeah. good that they never become champions themselves. They're always there just to make the high-level marquee guys look good. Ross could be so good doing these D and E level games, making unentertaining games entertaining, that CBS is like, well, we can't bump Ross up because he's the reason why people are watching these crappy D level games in week 16.
It's, you know what? I always
almost
felt
too
like
good for his own good.
That, you know what? You know what would need to happen is somebody out there. Now, a lot of these network executives, you got to remember, they're actual morons. Like, some of them are like the decision when it comes to actually understanding or knowing what's good and what's bad or what have you. They're actual morons.
Super horny too, according to some lawsuits out there.
It's okay to be horny. It's how do you express it in the workplace? That's the issue. The horniness isn't the issue.
I interrupted
it's how
you.
What you do with the horniness. So I've learned. So the so many sessions with the IR. So with the HR. So Kevin Harlan and Ross Tucker together are a lot of fun. Oh, and I think Harlan really appreciates Ross and his ability to talk football, but also to have fun. The problem with Harlan is he's also so good at what he does that I honestly think it keeps him from being at the apex.
It's the same
because
thing.
He likes to, okay, I'm going to do a basketball game tonight, then I'll do a baseball game tomorrow, and then I'll do an NFL game the next day. And I wonder if Harlan has turned down some opportunities at times for some of the marquee spots because he just enjoys doing everything so much and he's so good at it.
I'm confused. But, are you saying maybe we don't want to be the best in the world anymore?
No, I'm not. Okay. No, because in our genre and especially the way everything has evolved, all you got to have is a following.
Yeah, yeah. Good. All right, we're done. We're out of time.
Seth, why?
Antibodies to you. Yeah, John Harrison, Mark Vandermeer, they're up next. But first,
antibodies and a best in the world, but not too best in the world for to you.
Thank you.